If you enjoy The Spectator's podcast, why not subscribe to the magazine as well? You can get 12 weeks of The Spectator for just £12, plus a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher if you go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. This is a podcast-only deal, and we hope you take us up on it.
Hello and welcome to this special Saturday edition of Coffee House Scots. I'm James Heal, and I'm joined today by Spectator's Lucy Dunn and former SNP advisor Fergus Mush. Now, Lucy, it's been a big week in Scottish politics. At the beginning of the week, it looked like John Swinney was going to face a leadership challenge. That didn't transpire. Since then, he's been sworn in as First Minister, has named his cabinet. Tell us about those appointments and what they mean for the future of the SNP.
Yeah, so we've seen this reshuffle, which was the focus of a lot of attention on Wednesday. I think there was some thought that it was a little bit underwhelming given there wasn't really that much change. And it's been dubbed this continuity cabinet because we've seen Kate Forbes put back in as Deputy First Minister, and she now holds the economy brief. That's been taken off Mary McCallan. But apart from Kate Forbes coming back in, and actually apart from John Swinney being First Minister, he was a backbencher for the last year, the rest of the cabinet hasn't particularly changed. And actually, I think what's more interesting is some of the more junior positions. So we've seen the Minister for Independence, Jamie Hepburn's previous role, completely scrapped. Jamie Hepburn is now the Minister for Parliamentary Business instead. We've seen Ivan McKee, who was Kate Forbes' campaign manager during the SNP leadership contest, brought back in as a junior minister. He's now the Public Finance Minister. And so there are these slightly smaller changes happening there. And actually, when you look at the overall size of the cabinet, it has slightly reduced. This is something that John Swinney had been talking to journalists about in the days going up to the reshuffle. But I think overall, there's a kind of an expectation that as much as John Swinney's talking about unity within the party, bringing people together, there could have been more done in order to get a lot of the different sides of the SNP on board, so to speak.
And Fergus, of course, you'll know many of the key people within the SNP, and perhaps more striking is that as well as the small changes in terms of the frontward-facing cabinet roles, there's also a big clear out of the special advisers as well. What do you think John Swinney's trying to say with the big changes he's making in this reshuffle?
Well, I think it's maybe a bit premature to read too much into the changes in the special advisors team. There's been some reappointed immediately as a kind of transition team, and it will be seen from here who Mr. Swinney and his cabinet choose to appoint to some of those key roles. I think this is actually the kind of process that took place upon Humza Yousaf becoming First Minister last year. There was an initial small team appointed to start with before the wider special advisor team was put into place. But I think more broadly, yeah, sure, it's all changed. There's a sense of calm has returned to Scottish politics this week compared to what came before. And I think there is a bit of a kind of sigh of relief that there's somebody of John Swinney's experience now leading the party and the Scottish government. There is a big change in that his deputy, Kate Forbes, comes from, let's say, a different brand of politics to what is been the prevailing view in the party over the last year. But at the same time, there's not much change in the personnel on the front bench. So let's see whether the changes are rung around policy and ideas and the vision for Scotland.
And I would add to just what Fergus has said there, that talking about Kate Forbes being coming in and very different to what has been in place with the Scottish government for the past 12 months. We've seen, obviously, the end of the Butte House Agreement with the Greens, and John Swinney talking about how he stands very much in the centre-left, more than the left. The reaction from the Green Party itself has been quite interesting to look at. So after we found out that Kate Forbes was brought back in as Deputy First Minister, we got a statement from the Scottish Greens talking about concerns. It didn't specifically talk about Kate Forbes, but we know that they're concerned both about her views that she's expressed very publicly in the past about where she stands on issues such as gay marriage and having children out of marriage as well. And at the same time, there's also this economic slant because the Greens have been very pro this progressive taxation policy that we've seen in Scotland, which there's been a lot of conversation about whether or not that's driving earners, high earners, out of the country. And I think the Greens have made it very clear that if the SNP wants to work with the Greens, they're now in a minority government. It's very, very different from what Humza Yousaf was having to deal with before. If they want to get their support, then they will have to work together to continue to pursue these types of economic goals. And we know that from the SNP leadership contest last year, this progressive taxation, as much as it was brought in under Kate Forbes as Finance Secretary, if you go back then to 2021 kind of time, there's still this prevailing sort of attitude from the Kate Forbes side of things that she is not entirely keen to continue pushing this taxation to become more and more progressive in that sense. So I think that'd be quite interesting to see how the different cross-party relations work in Holyrood. And I'd also add that I just said, you know, previously about Jamie Hepburn, how he has lost his previous role as Minister for Independence, he's now Parliamentary Business. At the same time that we got this announcement out on Wednesday night, there was an episode of Debate Night, which is kind of like Scotland's version of Question Time. And Jamie Hepburn was on that programme, introduced as Minister for Independence. And at the time, there was a conversation on that programme with Scottish Conservative Jamie Green, who said that if John Swinney wanted to work more closely with the Scottish Tories, then he suggested it'd be a good idea to scrap the Minister for Independence, which is what happened. So I do think it'd be quite interesting over the next couple of months to see exactly what types of cross-party relations come about, and particularly whether we'll see more unionist parties working with the SNP.
So we discussed already the personnel changes, but let's talk about the policy changes, Fergus, as well. I mean, it would seem that there's more of a focus on the cost of living. John Swinney has said that he wants to make child poverty a real focus of government tackling that. Do you think there's a conscious shift away from some of the rhetoric we've seen in recent years around the Sturgeon and Youssef administrations?
I wouldn't say that Nicola Sturgeon and Hamza Youssef were disinterested in the end of child poverty, but what he is doing here is playing into the campaign that Kate Forbes actually ran for the leadership of the SNP last year. She pitched it as, you know, grow the economy in order to grow the tax base, in order to do such things as address child poverty. And I think John, in a very conscious nod to that message, which kind of rang true at that time, you know, Kate Forbes was the runner-up last year, but she still got almost half of the party vote. I think he's very much speaking her language and speaking it for a reason. Secondly, you know, with the end of the Bute House Agreement, the coalition with the Greens in the Scottish Government, the Greens were an overtly anti-economic growth party. They did not see that in and of itself as a force for good. Now, that is not in the mainstream of Scottish politics or any politics, frankly. And so what you now see, and you know, John Swinney is very mindful of this, is very pro-business, was a pro-business finance secretary in the Salmond era. He is saying to businesses across Scotland and employers and people who have faced incremental tax increases year on year under the SNP for the past few years, there's going to be a change. There's going to be a policy change here, and we're going to make sure that those extra cost pressures that have been placed upon you in a tricky and tough few years for businesses in terms of their cost outlays, we're going to seek to address that. We're going to be your friends in this. We're going to partner with you to ensure that, you know, overall Scotland benefits. We widen the tax base and, you know, use that economic growth as the driver of what funds our public services.
And Lucy, about 18 months ago, we saw a similar situation, perhaps after a short-lived Prime Minister in Liz Truss. Rishi Sunak, they came in, was seen as sort of clearing up the mess. But of course, at successive polls, we've seen that voters haven't kind of rewarded the so-called competence premium that he was meant to bring in. Do you think perhaps that after, 17 years in government in one form or another, it's going to be difficult in terms of for the public to see a renewed and rejuvenated SNP? What's the kind of reaction been thus far to the changes Swinney's been making?
Well, I think what's quite funny in some ways is that we've seen the SNP criticise the Tory party for the way in which they have deposed of and taken on new leaders. And in actual fact, that's kind of very similar to what's been happening with the SNP. So it wasn't the you know, the Scottish public that got to vote on Hamza Youssef, and it hasn't been the Scottish public or even the party membership that's got to vote on John Swinney. And so I think that's quite interesting to look at from that perspective. Obviously, Swinney has got experience, and as Fergus said, you know, he's been in government before. At the same time, I think there's going to have to be a sort of shift in what the priorities are. And I think Hamza Youssef got very distracted by this poll that he saw that said independent support is roughly about 50%, but support for the SNP is dropping. And I think there was this real look at that sort of gap that was continually increasing over the past couple of months when he was First Minister. And he kept on talking about how he wanted to put independence, page one, line one of the SNP's manifesto. But when you look at the polls, that's not actually what Scottish voters are saying are their top priorities. Instead, it's things like the cost of living crisis, the NHS, very much similar, you know, issues to what English voters are saying.
So they support independence, but they're not, they accept it's not as of tier one, perhaps priority.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting, actually, and John Curtis has talked about this quite a lot, is that people who are independence supporters, you know, that can exist alongside their desire to see their better sort of day-to-day experiences, whether that's, as I said, you know, inflation, economy, NHS. That doesn't necessarily change in terms of their independence sort of view, but at the same time, they want to see those, you know, they want to see their quality of life improve. And I think that under Humza Yousaf, that issue, you know, those big points weren't really being looked at in that much detail. He didn't really seem to have much idea and much of a guiding philosophy. So I think that's something that John Swinney probably does need to try and set out if he's wanting to have a sort of successful time, particularly as we're seeing with 2024 general election polling for the SNP, they're predicted to lose about half their seats.
Yeah, Fergus, I mean, that was going to my question would be, how do you see the next 2 years unfolding? 7 months' time, we've got to have a general election in Westminster. May 2026, we've got to the next Holyrood elections. How do you see the next 2 years unfolding for John Swinney as First Minister?
Yeah, it's interesting. And that question's been asked a lot over this past week. You know, does John Swinney's now leadership of the SNP alongside Kate Forbes, two figures in Scottish politics that are more popular than Anna Sarwar, the Scottish Labour leader, according to the polls, does that stem the march of Labour in Scotland ahead of a general election? I think it might temper it, but I'm not sure it stops it altogether. I think what the impact of this week, and it will depend on what, you know, John Swinney chooses to do next in terms of policy and realigning that focus of the Scottish government on the things that matter to the people. What that will do will is arrest some of the decline, I think. I'm not sure within the context of a UK general election where the story will be Tories on the decline, the Labour Party on the march, and a real sort of sweeping cyclical momentum towards a Labour victory in an autumn election, let's assume this year, there might be a bit of a fight or a struggle for the SNP to be a party of relevance in that. The big general elections in recent years where they've had UK cut through, where they've had that relevance, have been in 2015 off the back of the independence referendum when, you know, there was a kind of reaction vote, and, you know, for the first time the SNP took the majority of seats. They took the vast majority of the seats, 56 out of 59 available. Again, in the 2019 general election, a good one for the SNP because it was being used as a bit of a vote on the whys and wherefores of Brexit. There might have been a different kind of mathematical situation where the SNP could have played up its chances of becoming the power broker, holding the balance of power in a tighter contest between Labour and the Conservatives. But going by all the polling, going by local elections in England that we saw last week, mayoral elections and whatnot, and a string of by-election defeats for the Conservative Party, it does not look like the SNP can play into that particularly well. The trouble is, if momentum is working against you in politics, it's a very, very hard force to overcome. So if the SNP looks like it's taken a backward step in an autumn election this year, there'll have to be serious regrouping and refocusing ahead of 2026 anyway. The SNP can play their relevance to their advantage there in that, you know, unlike in a general election where they perhaps didn't have much hope of being in the mix, they can aspire to be the next government of Scotland. People might like what John Swinney has to offer in that context. But at the same time, there is another cyclical force working against the SNP in that they will have been in government by 2026 for, 19 years. Mm. And, you know, that is a long time. A record for any government faces a lot of scrutiny over a period like that, whether it's on the home front, you know, matters such as health, education and whatnot, or, and I guess this is where the challenge will more come from the independence supporting side, how far has the SNP as the party of government and also the party of independence managed to advance the cause in that near two decades in charge? And if there is, you know, perhaps, you know, growing frustration within the movement, that may be an internal factor too.
Thank you, Fergus. Thank you, Lucy. And thank you for listening to Coffeehouse Scots.